everybody. Welcome to the Dissecting Liberty podcast. Today we have, let's see here, 1, 2, 3, 4 people that have never been on the podcast before. So why don't y'all introduce yourselves in alphabetical order?
I am Ace_Arcist on Twitter. And yeah, that's it.
Okay.
This is Gora Brewing. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, Discord. Y'all know who I am.
Yeah, this is Steppy at Pweezno on Twitter.
This is Bill, Cynical in New York on Twitter.
Okay. So today we're going to have a conversation that was kind of inspired by an article I wrote that some of y'all may have read. It'll be in the description, or it will be on the show notes page that's at dissectingliberty.com/whatever number episode this is. I forget which one we're on now. It'll be dissectingliberty.com/55. I'll put the link there, or you can find it at anarchopsychology.com. So we're going to keep it pretty informal. I guess I'll just ask y'all, did y'all agree with my thesis, or at least one of them?
I wanted to say that, yeah, I read through it and I agreed with pretty much 100% of it, to be honest. I don't think that, or maybe I should let you explain it before I explain it.
Okay. Basically, I came up with maybe a clearer way of saying it when I was rereading it today. I was saying that, or I might have said to y'all a while back, like, I think the two political parties, the main political parties, focus on emotion as a method towards gaining power. And then I think, and that's obviously not good. And then I think the main issue with ANCAP types, libertarian types, is they use hierarchical logic as a method towards gaining power. And that's another issue. Also, I just, as a corollary to that, as someone that is in the anarchist kind of ANCAP community, I think the issue is when you solely rely on that rigid framework, you draw in a certain type of person, and that's not necessarily bad. I address this in an article when I say that's where the joke comes from, where all libertarians are autists, you know, and that's not necessarily bad. Like, we need mathematically minded people in the movement, right? But you know, it's not. It that can't be the entire movement. That's an issue.
Right. Well, I think it does breed this argument that ends up getting made that I think you're trying to allude to, which is like, okay, so we care about societal good. What's the best way to achieve that? And then they present libertarianism. And I think it kind of misses the point because, I mean, most people aren't going to sit around and think deeply about it. And so what they end up doing is just saying, oh, well, we'll just make the state do that. And however they get it done, they get it done. Mm-hmm. And so our argument is, well, but liberty is better for societal good. And it just ends up falling on deaf ears or being laughed out of the room, really, in many cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my thesis was basically that, I think a better route is focusing on the ethics of anarchism, and not as a method to gain power, but more of just a way of living, you know. And I think, like I mentioned, agorism as a, like, that's kind of echoed in agorism. It's more of a framework in and of itself rather than a framework or method towards an end. You know, and I think that's a much more realistic way to look at it.
Right.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
So, yeah. In the article also, I mentioned left libertarianism and left anarchism. Mm-hmm. I guess, what are y'all's thoughts on that, on the feasibility of it, on the possibility of, like, allyship or, like, overlap?
Okay, so I personally think the only way, I've kind of gone on back and forth on this, but I think the only way, like, a left anarchist society can really work is if it's more of like a panarchist thing, right? If they will at least concede that, yeah, right, or at least not, well, market anarchy to some extent is allowable, and they will not use force, and we won't use force on them in some aspect. I think that type of system is feasible. I do think that can work, but how most left anarchists see it as working as basically, no, it has to be anarcho-communism or some form of syndicalism, and that's it. I don't think we can get very far with these people in that regard, right?
Right, and with those people, what you see is a difference between the border that they want. So they're like in the U.S. or in the world, right? They don't...
Right.
It's always this idea that I'm right, therefore everyone should get on board with what I think.
Yes.
Yep. And yeah. For some reason that everyone that this applies to is part of the country they're in or whatever. But it's funny to me because I'm like, well, if you get rid of the state, like define the country then, like define where that line is, because there's no reason that all of us have to be the same other than the fact that we're oppressed by the same state. So like, where do you get this idea that, you know, like, oh, we're going to create a communist nation, which I guess is refuted by the communists who realize that they have to be globalist, or, you know, they need to be, what do you call it, all or nothing on that.
Essentially imperialist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How the Soviets survived by essentially gobbling up their neighbors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, what about you, Steppy?
Yeah, as far as, I mean, I see it as there's two camps of sort of left anarchists to deal with. And one, like people have been saying, is basically beyond negotiation with. And that's the people who don't agree with like dictionary definitions of property. So, yeah, I'm not sure what that, you know, part of the political compass really even is. I have a hard time understanding it, and I haven't bothered reading much of it. But as far as like sort of the left market anarchists, like, yeah, I mean, I'm happy to, you know, work in a coalition alongside them and completely ignore them.
Yeah.
Right. Well, so here's an interesting one. I had a guy on Twitter a long time ago at this point, calling himself a mutualist, that he had said, like, okay, so we were talking about rent, obviously. And <Yeah. laughs> I had mentioned, like, okay, so like two of us make an arrangement, you think that one of us is ruling the other, and therefore, like, that's bad, but like, what are you gonna do? Like, and it just, he said that, like, in an anarchist situation, he would fight against that arrangement, which to me seems odd, because it's like, well, now you're just kind of butting into other people's business, aren't you? So even the so-called mutualists and market anarchists, Proudhonian style, I don't know. There's a sentiment that they have to eradicate it globally and not just within their own lives or within, right, you know, the lives of their community, whatever that is defined as.
Yeah, and like it's just like the want to like abolish hierarchies, which like if you say that, you know, that's like right. An alt-right dog whistle, you know.
Right.
I
do have a solution to that maybe we can get into later. I don't know if here's the right place for it, but yeah, my favorite response to that has always been the Dave Smith thing, like, what's your favorite color?
Yeah.
Well, also, like, who determines what a hierarchy even is. To begin to say that you want to abolish hierarchy is to impose a hierarchy of judgment. You've already lost.
Yeah.
Well, what they'll always do is they'll slip in this, right? Well, no, we think we're only for justifiable hierarchy, which opens up all the questions, right? And they never go into what a justifiable hierarchy is. So they just throw that out there to cover for themselves, but they don't ever actually delve into what they mean.
It's an infinite regress. Like,
that's right. Yeah.
Eventually, you are imposing a hierarchy of logic.
Yes.
Yeah, bottom line, that's what it is. I think maybe they would say that a justifiable hierarchy is based in democracy somehow, which is just yet another Barnum statement. But it's so weird that they're so focused on this idea, like, well, if we create this coalition, this union, right, that voting somehow gets rid of the hierarchy. But it's like, and at any point along that chain of voting, even if you're a union rather than, you know, people voting in a government situation, at any point someone could manipulate that. So I don't understand how you just go, right, oh yeah, everyone will just agree to it. It's like, no, I mean, we're having problems with election meddling right now, like for the past 4 years, right, in various forms or another. And it's like, okay, so the guy bringing the ballots in this union to the union boss and saying, okay, let's go count them up, like he could fake it, right? Or he could bring it to the union boss, and the union boss could just say that it turned out a certain way, even when it didn't, right?
Right.
And then there's always the issue of, like, well, if half of the union voted one way and the other half, you know, 51-49 voted another way, then is the 49% disenfranchised and just screwed over? Or, like, how can it be said that that this is just arrangement?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the funny part about that is they don't even, like, the left anarchists don't even agree with amongst themselves, like, what a justifiable hierarchy is. Like, they can't even agree whether democracy is a good thing, right? And that's so they fight over that all the time too. So yeah, they don't even themselves have a good foundation of what justifiable hierarchy even means, really.
But do you think the ones that are anti-democracy are a bit easier to talk to?
Yes. Oh yeah. 100%.
It's kind of like I would rather talk to a full-blown tanky communist than a neo-lib, you know?
Yes.
Oh yeah, because at least they know what they mean.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
and they're honest.
Anti-democracy has at least figured out to a certain extent that the game is rigged.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, and they just want to rig it for themselves. That's
I can't understand the anarchists who don't see democracy as coercive. Like, it does not, like, I don't understand how they can view democracy and view what it is and not see the coercive nature to it. It boggles my mind.
You know what response I got last time I tried to bring that up to somebody? I did the whole two wolves and a sheep voting on who's for dinner, and I got some weird responses about how, like, well, what if one of the wolves is really old, so they vote to eat the old wolf so that the sheep doesn't have to die? And I was like, you completely missed the point. You're just making things up to try to use my analogy against me. Like, I don't even know how you get that. Like,
old quote by Stalin, it doesn't matter who you vote for, it matters who counts the votes.
Yeah.
Yeah, who counts the votes, yeah.
Exactly, well, exactly.
That's interesting. Yeah. So let me get y'all's thoughts on the LP as a tool to spread the message.
Oh, I have a lot to say about this.
let's get into it.
Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
All right.
If I remember correctly, David Nolan, the founder, said, you know, this party isn't in the game to win elections. It's in the game to educate. And if people are going to get into the election game, again, knowing that it is rigged, probably the best strategy at this point would be, you know, if you're gonna run, depending where you live and, you know, how the political makeup of where your location is just to infiltrate the two bigger parties. And what was the other thing? And you don't have to embrace either party's ideals. Just, you know, do the whole paperwork and rigmarole just to run it and, you know, put the others on the defensive. You know, put the others against on the defensive.
Yeah, that's our good buddy, good friend of the show, crowdfunded governments tactic. Shout out.
I think for me, like, here's the thing, right? The LP on a local level, when I say I really dislike the LP, I'm not talking about like the people who go, you know, door to door or on the local level or actually those people are actually doing good work, right? I respect that. Especially the people like on the real local level trying to maybe, you know, win local elections, whatever you think about like the prospect of the possibility of them winning those local elections through the LP. I think that is a much better strategy, but the LP at the national level is a, I think it's not just irrelevant. I think it actually does harm to the cause personally. Like I really think that when they go out there and they misrepresent it to such an extent, and that it's not that they're even consciously misrepresenting it. I think that the nature of the political game forces them in some sense, like subconsciously, to have to compromise and to have to, like, in some sense, sell out, right? So it may not even be a conscious thing for them. It's just the nature of the game. And if they're going to do that, like, to me, the LP trying to win, like, elections, it's like, I don't even understand mathematically how they think that's going to work out or why it should work out that way. It would seem to me like if you're going to do that, it would be a much better strategy just to like have the most radical candidate and just send the message out. Use it as just like a bully pulpit, right? Don't try to even, you know, win elections. Just try to say, hey, this is what's wrong. But even then, right, as crowdfunded government has said, right, you would have better luck doing that under a Republican or a Democrat.
Right. Yeah. Well, this is why I oppose the idea of a party at all. Like, if you're going to have an activist organization, just be an activist organization. I don't understand why we think that the only way to get our voice out there is to get on the political debate stage. Because obviously podcasts have absolutely done more for liberty than I think.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, to act like marketing is impossible without ballot access, I think is just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah.
But I'll throw out a quote that I had earlier this week, because this is basically my opinion stated pretty quickly here. I don't think the LP is fucking up at all, actually. I think the LP is doing exactly what it's designed to do, which is perpetuating the system by giving people the illusion of a third option. Voting, in my opinion, breeds complacency in other areas, and the LP is the perfect place to isolate those who would be the movers and shakers from actually doing things because they're too busy dealing with the, for example, Mises caucus versus pragmatist argument.
Oh, my God.
And to your point, too. And I have another paragraph. All right. This is also why I don't spend much time on Twitter anymore. As fascinating as I find it to toy with ideas like this and practice getting a point across, I find arguing to be the most useless thing we could do in terms of achieving liberty for ourselves or anyone. And politics is just constant arguing and trying to figure out which argument is going to be most convincing. But frankly, it'll be the growling in our bellies that drives us to act, not the philosophical musings of those who claim to be enlightened.
Oh, I've never agreed with something more in my life.
So yeah, I wrote that in a very autistic rage. So the LP is basically just controlled opposition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and great example of what's happening right now with it is that that Dave Smith debate with whatever the guy's name is on Lions of Liberty.
Oh, yeah.
Like that guy nobody had ever heard of outside of like. Yeah. Outside of being a fuckwit, you know, and then, I mean, my God.
How recent was this?
A couple months ago, maybe.
Okay. It was like a month and a half ago, or so, I think. Maybe two.
Yeah, I haven't been listening to him as much as I used to, but he's always good.
Oh, this is on Lions of Liberty.
Oh, that one. Now I know. Okay.
I didn't go listen to it,
but was it good? Was it worth it?
No, it was infuriating.
Okay. Yeah.
Because the guy kept calling, it basically was calling Dave Smith like an anti-Semite, and just like, dude, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hilarious.
I mean, like the normal kind of lefty pragmatic libertarian stuff, like, oh, you give a platform to Stefan Molyneux,
The Cato people.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the Cato people. Yeah. Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Man.
Oof.
Oh. Oh, if I can like piggyback off of what Agora said just a second ago, though, with the LP, like I actually had like a similar tweet a while back where it was like, you know, I think I was responding to crowdfunded government, and I was like, you know, the LP is actually doing a real good job of like taking people who would be radicals and domesticating them. Because that's what they do, right? There is something to the argument that it is true that they might give people who don't know about libertarian ideas a way into libertarianism. That's true. But the problem is it also keeps those people trapped in there too, right? It doesn't allow them to grow. It's a self-referential cycle where they keep people politically motivated, and they think if they can just get people if they can just keep pushing that ballot access, then those people are actually doing something for the cause of liberty. And that's insane to me.
Yep. But none of them have a clue how to grow a little bit of vegetables in their backyard, you know.
That's right.
It's like, you want to be free? I don't know, like maybe get out of big food, big pharma, everything else. Like, you know, you think of the ways that we're influenced by the state, but we're all here like eating it up anyways. And hey, go, you know, go door to door handing out pamphlets that people are just going to throw away.
Yeah. So as long as we're dunking on the national LP, like I liken the organization at that level to just like a drama club, you know. It's just like people who are kind of like on the margin. They're a little weird, but they still want to exist within the structure, and they want to have their clique. And if you try to take their clique away from them and take their clout away from them, like, you know, that's going on their college resume. They're going to say like they ran for Congress under the LP. Like, that's really important to them. Because if you watch the way that they interact with like crowdfunded government online, they just don't want to hear what he has to say. They don't engage or see like the actual facts that he's saying. Like it just goes right through their brain. It's like they just can't fathom the idea of having their drama club defunded.
I gotta say something. I got a Twitter message a while back. This was during the summer. Me and Zero got a Twitter message from Ted saying, "Hey guys, I got this crazy idea. I want to come on the show and talk about it." And we're like, "All right." He wouldn't tell us what it was. We're like, "All right." And we eventually have him on. And it was his idea of like getting rid of the LP and infiltrating the Republicans and the Democrats, which he went on Lines of Liberty to talk about it. He went on, you know, every podcast in the community. And like he just did a media blitz. And at the time, I think both me and Zero were kind of like, okay, not sure about that, but we were kind of apathetic to it. But man, like as time has gone on, like crowdfunder government has radicalized me. He's right. Like he's just totally right. He was right on every point, you know, and he was just way ahead. He was way ahead of out. Yeah, go ahead. I just want to appreciate Ted.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I love that guy. No, I was thinking about how for me it was really when Aaron said it's not bottom unity, it's bottom right, top left unity that is going to win. And I was like, actually, you might be right.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, he's nuts. But sometimes I'm like, he's saying something that sounds so out there, but also I've never agreed more.
Right.
Oh, nuts.
Crazy. It just might work.
Yeah. Also, if I can say one more thing on the LP real quick,
sure.
It also makes no sense to me why they think that if we just beg our masters for longer chains or just get ballot access, then or get enough in the polls, then we'll be allowed on stage. Like the last time a third party candidate ran, Ross Perot, it was a complete disaster for both parties, and they changed the rules so that they could so that would never happen again. So what on earth makes the LP think that if they just get enough, that the rules aren't going to change like they did last time, and then they're going to be allowed on the stage, right?
Remember
what incentive do the powers that be have to let them on the stage? That's what I just want to ask.
Well, I was just going to...
Goldman, if they made if voting changed anything, they'd make it illegal.
I just want to tack on to that. Remember when Ron Paul was doing really, really well, and they just took his name out of the list when they showed him on the news.
They took his delegates away from him at the convention too. Yeah. he won second in, I think it was Iowa, and they've pulled up first and third and fourth on the list.
Yeah, that was it.
Yeah, that great John Stewart clip. Have y'all seen that?
Yeah. Yep.
That was fantastic. So like I see that. I see like the LP as I don't know that they're really like, okay. I'm trying to think of how to phrase this. I think, frankly, to a lot of people, they do not care about the Fed. Like, we can say that. There are a lot of people that just don't care. Like, the anti, while it's true, while the Fed is horrible, a lot of people just don't care, and that anti-Fed argument is not useful. So, and it's all sorts of stuff like that. Like, I forget, I was talking to one of y'all, or maybe it was with Zero the other day. I was saying that, like, the Mises Institute, God bless them, just got the rights to economics in one lesson. And I went to the Ron Paul Symposium, and when you walk in, the first thing you see, they had a giant stack of hardback economics in one lesson copies. And you could get as many as you wanted. You can order free copies, as many as you want, and they just want you to disseminate it, you know? And I think that's awesome, because like that was the first book that was one of the books that got me into economics, you know, that really, I mean, it's a fantastic book. But then,
oh, it's great.
Yeah, the other thing to contend with is, like I said about the Fed, there are a lot of people that just aren't going to care. You know, there are a lot of people that aren't going to read the book outright.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people that may start it or something, and it just, the argument doesn't appeal to them.
Yeah.
So,
you know. Well, speaking to the point you made in the article about using pathos, I guess if we're trying to appeal to people on that in this regard, I think like the way that I like to refer to the dollar anymore, like if I get to talking to somebody about money, I'll just hold up a dollar and I'll say, you know what this is? This is an IOU that they straight up already said they weren't going to pay, and we're still pretending it's money. Yeah. Like I can't really think of an economic argument that would be useful other than that, where it's like, look at this. This is a bad IOU. Why do you care about this? Why do you think that they should be in charge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the thing, you know. Well, go ahead, Ace.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, I think the problem with economic arguments in general is that they really only appeal to people who are already have an inclination towards economics, mostly. Yes. Yeah, not everyone, but a lot of people,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
Yeah. So when you try to make like these economic arguments, like the Fed, to a layperson, right? It's going to come, because when you're talking about the Fed, there are like first, second, third, fourth, and fifth order effects of all these actions that the Fed causes that are detrimental, right? And it's going to be extremely difficult to show every single like detrimental effect that the Fed causes to this person before their eyes just glaze over, right? So if you're trying to convince them, it's just not a good strategy, in my opinion. Like I like economics, but I love the Mises Institute, but I was always more persuaded by the ethical arguments of anarchism personally, mm-hmm. right?
Okay. Before we get to that, so with economics on one end and then like the LP on the other, I view that as like the logical wing, you know, the facts and logic wing, quote unquote. So let's talk a bit about appealing to emotion. Like what you mentioned, Agora, like the pathos of it. So like, let's talk about the benefits and the downfall or the pitfalls of using emotion as a recruitment tool or a method towards spreading the message. Are y'all there?
I'm trying to think where to start off on that one.
I thought it died off my end.
I thought it. My internet's been weird lately.
I'm pro pathos. So I think just use it effectively and don't use it deceitfully. So, for instance, getting back to, like, you know, your example of, well, how do you get people to care about the Fed, right? Like, you just be like, look, like, I think you can make a nice case in 1 minute or less that the Fed is selling you funny money and inflating your savings away. And be like, they're stealing from you. They're stealing from you every second of every day. Aren't you a little mad? Like, so that's, you know, a pathos argument, but it's a good one.
Putting it in layman's terms would be a lot more effective, because again, charts, graphs, data, that all has its place, but again, a lot of people prefer in layman's term. You know, for example, if anyone here a mechanic or in the medical field at all?
No, not me personally.
No.
Okay, so like when the doctor or the mechanic's trying to explain the problem with someone to you, they try to break it down as simple as possible without going into their own jargon. In certain cases, they have to, because, you know, there's no other way to explain it. But that would be the approach to take to try to explain why, you know, why the Fed is bad, why printing money is bad, why the warfare state is bad, into layman's terms, instead of, you know, breaking out the chart and that meme from Always Sunny Philadelphia.
Yeah. And I think the issue with it, like Steppy said, is you can't be deceitful, because not only is that not right, and we can talk about that, but also it doesn't necessarily, because like, everything we do is towards like the longevity of the movement. Mm-hmm. You know, like we want people that like these ideas grab hold of, like we want to red pill people. Like you can't un-red pill somebody, you know?
Right.
And like if you're deceitful when you appeal to emotion, then you're not red pilling them. You know, it's because eventually everyone realizes to a certain point, unless you thoroughly brainwash them, which is not a good idea, because that's the society we live in now. They will eventually wisen up, you know. And I think maybe that might be the libertarian to alt-right pipeline. You know, people get introduced to these ideas in a faulty manner, and then they back out of them.
Yeah, 100%.
But I think I'm not sure what the answer is, and we don't have to dwell on it if there's not a good conversation in it at the moment. Well, but go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I have just one point that I just thought of. So you brought up the JoJo tweet in the article, and I'm thinking, I wonder if maybe it's not that it's a pathos argument, but that it's a pathos argument being made by a member of a political party. And so rather than being an argument for liberty, it's just an argument for votes.
Yeah.
And maybe that's the issue with it. Because I don't have a problem with using a pathos argument like, you know, aren't you mad about this, right? Like show them a picture of a guy who got shot in his sleep next to his pregnant girlfriend for no reason. Like,
sure.
And oh, like, yeah. Hey, aren't you mad about this? Right.
Right. It comes across as fake because of what they're trying to sell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's when the party does it, because, and I think right. that, I mean, not to go off on too much of a tangent, but I think that is kind of what's holding the movement back, is that the Libertarian Party is the party that says, you know, I don't believe in the government, you should give me power, right? It's like, well, wait a minute, you just said you don't believe in the government.
Right. I to piggyback off that, I think it's much more like easier for people to see something like by example, like see someone doing something by example, than saying, hey, trust us, vote for us, and then your life will just be better, right? And then because they promise something radical, and then what they do is they say, here, give me all this power, and then you have all, because people are trained to believe that no, if you do this and you take away all these like safety nets from the state, very, very bad things will happen. So people in most cases are not going to want to risk rocking the boat, especially when they have to put their votes on the line, when they could safely put their votes in someone they trust, who they, you know, the devil they know in some sense, right? So right.
Whereas if you can show someone, you know, how to live, you know, without the state or something like that, they might be much more inclined to be open to that type of way of living, essentially, right, than trying to put all their trust in another politician.
I see what you're saying there. I guess that kind of goes to something that I've been trying to get across to people lately, is that agorism isn't something we're just going to pick up and do. Like, we need to have these institutions available when this happens. So, like, if we're going to have a free market insurance company or a free market bank or whatever the heck we're doing, that needs to be in place before the collapse, because, you know, like, we need to lead by example and live this life now, because it just kind of falls back into the trap of like, well, I voted and I thought I did something, you know?
Right. Right. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
All right. Well, it looks like Cotton says his internet is freaking out, so we will fill the time.
Yeah.
Got any thoughts on this? Cold Highway?
No, I pretty much agree with you that that basically is the it seems like, I'm trying to, how do I say this, like, you're familiar with the concept of vicious cycle, right? And it's kind of, mm-hmm. The LP is kind of like that, you know. It's just it's running in place. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, it seems like it's running in place. That, again, like you said, oh, I voted. I think I thought we did something. You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like they've almost misconstrued the prize as, you know, getting the nomination and having some sort of national clout, and that's it. We fought the good fight. It's over. It's like,
yeah,
okay. Nice loser mentality.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, let's see. I dropped out for a second, so,
You're all right?
No, yeah, I'm good. I'll make it. we talked about logic.
Mm-hmm.
We talked logos. We talked about emotion, pathos. So let's turn the discussion towards the ethics, right? The ethos of the movement.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess one thing I need to mention as a preface is I know Rothbard wrote a book called The Ethics of Liberty. I don't know if he's using it in the same way I am, and I have not read the book. So
maybe I haven't either.
Do that. But I don't know, like, when I am thinking of the ethics of it, I think of two things. One, that there's no finitude to the fight, right? Like,
yes, I am completely on board with this. Yeah.
So it's like I mentioned earlier, in our discussion, you know, using logic and using emotion is like a method towards an end for something.
Right.
Well, then, like, the ethics of it is just very basically just how to live. Like, that's the typical, like, how to live a good life. That's the typical definition of ethics. And so, like, the ethics of liberty or anarchism would just be how to live free, how to live an anarchist lifestyle without attaining like an anarchist society, but it's more individual, which is more in my mind consistent with the rest of the arguments that we make.
This is like, I think I might have a lot to say on this part, so if I go on rambling, just tell me to shut up.
I
100% agree with this. So, like, as you're saying, there is no, like, end of history here, right? There is no end. Like I think one of the big problems in, like, even, like, the ANCAP community is sometimes they frame ANCAPistan as the end, right? This happens a lot, or this is, like, the goal. Yeah. But here's the thing, right? if we understand states as just coercive monopolies over a geographic area, right? While there might not always be states, there will always be people trying to coerce others, right? I think that's a fair assumption, right? Like, it's just fair to say. Now, with that being said, there will always be people trying to coerce others. And I think the best way to frame anarchism is as an experience rather than a destination or a goal, right? Like, we're having an anarchist exchange right now. None of us are here by coercion. No one is coercing us right now, right? So while we may live under a state right now, ultimately this conversation is an example of anarchism, in my view. So if we can frame it as an experience, I think that will do a lot to kind of alter the perception that people have. And it might, like, I understand why people don't want to, like, do that, because I think to some people, they do kind of want this, like, idyllic society, right? They do want to, like, reach for that goal, which is fine. But I think it's the benefits of having it as an experience is it kind of takes this worry or this burden off, right? Oh, we need to reach in Capistan. We need to do this. Well, no, you just need to find out ways to free yourself in your own life, right? It's like, at that point, once you understand that you are free in the sense that these people don't have a legitimate right to control you and you don't have a legitimate right to, or a legitimate obligation to be subservient to them, I think that's mentally freeing for me.
It's also just the fact that they can't directly control everything you do. Like, I don't have government supervision when I go to the bathroom, right? Like,
right.
I don't, right now, no one besides me is moving my lips and my tongue. Like, I think too many people gloss over that and act like, well, like, you know, I'll get into a little point that I think is expressed by Stirner, which is that, if a guy, like, let's say I'm being mugged and a guy holds a gun up to my head and he says, give me your money. Well, whether or not I give him money is still a choice that I make. And you can say, well, it was under duress and all that. But, like, this idea that he has power over you doesn't, like, he's still not in direct control of you and you can do anything you want. It's just that, you know, you may decide to give him the wallet because the wallet's not as important to you as you are to you. Right. Which is fine, and that's perfectly consistent with self-interest, but it's a point that I think too many people don't realize, because we might say, well, the government is oppressing me because I have to get a license to put a shed on my lawn, on my own lawn, and they have to come and inspect to make sure it's so many feet away from the property line or whatever. But the thing is, like, there's nothing stopping me from working around that system and taking control of my own life in ways that are unexpected and, you know, still undermining them without getting myself into trouble.
And well, if I can just say,
Well, isn't that the clear pill?
The what?
Yeah.
The clear pill.
The clear pill. I don't know if I've heard that one yet.
Or whatever.
Well, the white pill is black.
It's the same as the grill pill. The clear pill and the grill pill.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. If I can add one more thing onto that, I think my favorite philosopher, Albert Camus, I think he has a quote that exemplifies exactly what Khan is talking about. And in fact, exemplifies exactly what my understanding of anarchism is, right? It's like, the only way to live in an unfree world is to become so absolutely free that your very existence is an act of rebellion, quote unquote, right? I think to me, that is anarchism. Ultimately.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Hey, Cotton, while we're talking about this idea, do you want to read that quote that you put in the article from The Moon?
Oh, yeah. Let me see here. Okay. I'm quoting Bernard de la Paz from The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by...
great book.
What's his first name?
Heinlein.
Robert Heinlein.
Heinlein. Okay. A rational anarchist believes that concepts such as state, society, and government have no existence save as physically exemplified in the acts of self-responsible individuals. He believes that it is impossible to shift blame, share blame, distribute blame, as blame, guilt, responsibility are matters taking place inside human beings singly and nowhere else. But being rational, he knows that not all individuals hold his evaluations. So he tries to live perfectly in an imperfect world, aware that effort will be less than perfect, yet dismayed by self-knowledge of self-failure.
Okay, I'm trying to find the one from Stirner that's on this vein. Just a second here.
Well, just to, you know, fill the empty space in the meanwhile, I think Harry Brown, How I Found Freedom in an Unfree World, is, you know, pretty similar to this line of thought. You know, like, ultimately, if we're not just complainers, we're trying to actually embody something and not just, like, wait for social permission to live out an ideology. Because, of course, nothing ever happens if you just, like, you know, bitch and wait for it to be acceptable. So, like, it is about, like, you know, maximizing the amount of grilling you do, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to read one. I don't know how close it is, but it's kind of in that vein. The problem is, I think I read this one earlier, but I didn't actually copy it into my Word document, so... let's see.
It's all good.
I'll read this one here. So, yes. Well, that's what I'm here for. Okay. So this is kind of about like this idea of like people's rejections to anarchy or to like the idea that the state is going to oppress you kind of thing. And also like, you know, anarchy and lawlessness. So, quote, but they will bind me, unquote. My will nobody can bind, and my disinclination remains free. Quote, why everything must go topsy-turvy if everyone could do what he would, unquote. Well, who says that everyone can do everything? What are you there for, pray, you who do not need to put up with everything? Defend yourself, and no one will do anything to you. He who would break your will has to do with you and is your enemy. Deal with him as such. If there stand behind you for protection some millions more, then you are an imposing power and will have an easy victory. But even if as a power you overawe your opponent, still you are not on that account a hallowed authority to him unless he be a simpleton. He does not owe you respect and regard, even though he will have to consider your might. So the idea to me is like, in the case of the state, it's the state is going to do stuff to you, and it's only your job to find the loophole, right? And you don't even have to directly exert force back. Like, we don't want to start a war per se, but what we want to do is evade their attempts to infringe on our self-ownership.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so and then from that maybe we can talk about agorism a bit.
Okay.
Because like so this is where like I've come to in my thinking at the moment. Right? Like I think everything we've said thus far, like with Ace quoting Camus, me quoting Heinlein and Agora quoting Stirner, like that, it's all the same idea. And it's all mm-hmm. like anarchism is an internal thing rather than an external thing. So
yes.
I think the best, also with taking into consideration like the lack of finitude to the struggle, I think. From what I've seen, it seems like anarchism is the best answer, or agorism is the best answer,
mm-hmm.
because that it's not towards an end to right. a certain extent, you know.
Right. Well, or the end could be your own well-being rather than just being like, oh, and I mean, okay, I will say this just to avoid confusion. Konkin was absolutely an activist, and he was into the idea that like, yeah, we're going to free ourselves. And if you read right. Alongside Night, I mean, it was about this idea of the agorist cadre, like rising up after the fall of the state,
mm-hmm.
and the idea being that like, hey, they're gonna blow themselves up financially and we'll just be there to pick up where they left off kind of thing,
right?
Without being a state, obviously. Which which is why I bring up the idea of having these institutions before the collapse, because you need to be ready to, you know, go into full business. But I like the idea of taking that on an individual level and saying like, okay, I'm just going to do what I can do for me, and I'm going to stop trying to fight this power, because especially from the standpoint of marketing and politics, it seems to me that you're just bashing your head against a wall where you could be actually financially improving.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And to piggyback off that real quick with Konkin, that's actually where I diverge from Konkin a bit. Like, Konkin brings up the classic agorist argument, right? You can avoid, and you can avoid the state, and by doing that, you're going to starve the state of resources and funds. Mm-hmm. I think that's true, but I don't think it's compelling enough. It's not
the goal in and of itself.
That's right.
And for him, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, do you like what's his name? Is it Rayo? Do you know that name?
I've heard of it. I'm not too familiar, unfortunately.
So he invented this thing called VONU, V-O-N-U, which is voluntary, not vulnerable. And the idea is literally what I'm talking about with individualist, like Stirner, agorism, I guess, combination. Mm-hmm. There's a really good podcast for it, too. They do articles on their website. It's just the VONU podcast. But it's literally like the difference between the two is... Konkin would be the extrovert, whereas VONU is the, or Rayo is the introvert. So the extrovert says, like, I'm going to get out there and I'm going to tell everybody about it and spread the good word and try to get people on board. Whereas the introvert is like, nah, I'm just going to like get a house outside of the city and start a garden and focus on, redundancies and resiliencies to, be able to deal with, you know, the upcoming situations, whatever those happen to be. Yeah. And I'm definitely more on the introvert side these days.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Cause I think with like the problem with Konkin in that particular argument is that it's wrong that it's going to starve the state. I do think that is true to some extent. I think that the way agorism should be viewed more thoroughly though, is that agorism in some sense teaches you how to live free, right? That's kind of one of its main tenets as you as an individual. It gives you that opportunity to engage in anarchism, right?
Yep.
Really is what it does.
Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not against activism. Like, I still am trying to offload like 100 stickers that say vote for nobody, like they're bumper stickers, you know, with the agorist flag on them. And like, you know, I have this dream of normalizing the idea that like, you know, there's a good portion of the population that are anarchists and you should stop like thinking that they're like this crazy minority. But at the same time, a lot of that, like I'm not just handing these out for free. I'm definitely at least getting my cost back on it. And there's a business aspect and I'm, you know, I'm more concerned with my own entrepreneurship than I am with, you know, just, you know, I'm not going to go into the break room at work and drop a giant pile of copies of the Agorist Primer. Like,
right.
No.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I would say that, like, right now, I'm kind of an extrovert spreading the introvert message.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sure.
I guess that's my place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when you think about it, with agorism, what you said earlier, Cotton, is that many people practice it and they don't realize that they're doing it. You know, examples I would see is anyone who sells anything on Craigslist or through or use the Facebook Marketplace or the app OfferUp. You know, it's just two people agreeing, like, hey, I'm selling this for X price, and you know, whoever wants to buy it, you know, all right, I don't want to pay the whole price, but I'll give you this size, yes or no. I mean, I personally think, you know, when selling stuff through those types of marketplaces without state involvement, I personally believe that's practicing agorism.
Yeah, but I report those transactions. Sorry.
Really? Why? Like, I was being a really good agorist recently because I was speeding on a I-10 to and from Texas.
Were you liberating the highway?
I was liberating the highway, that's right.
I just want to go off of what Bill said, though, is that that's a really good point, and that's kind of what I've been trying to get at recently in my arguments, is that, like, people, I think a lot of even ANCAPs will kind of be under this impression that for anarchism to exist, the state has to go. And while, yes, for true, like, if you, in the sense of a society-wide anarchism, yes, that's true. But there are anarchist experiences every single day, right? Most of your interactions are anarchists every day, almost all of them. And yeah, most people just overlook them, though.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably a good stopping point.
I do want to, if I can add one more thing. Sorry for
absolutely.
When you're talking about like the finitude of this, some people will always try to bring up the argument against anarchism that, well, you know, these anarchist societies, you know, well, if we can get them to at least admit that, you know, yeah, they did exist, well, they eventually collapse. I'm never persuaded by this argument because it's like, yeah, these anarchist societies did collapse, and I'm sure Ancapistan, if it ever gets created, one day will collapse too. I don't see what your argument is here. It's like the fact that human beings die does not imply that therefore life doesn't work and then we should kill ourselves, right? So that we should always have our eyes on the goal here and right. Always remember that. No, it doesn't. Like, there will always be people trying to coerce you. If you just accept that from the jump, then you won't be persuaded. You won't like get dissuaded by these stupid arguments that statists make that, well, yeah, but these it's not going to last. Anarchism, yeah. You could be taken over and killed. Just because the fact that people have the capacity and do murder other people does not mean that, well, I guess life doesn't work and we should all just commit suicide because they've obviously won, right? And it's like, no, that's stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember if it was Rothbard or maybe I'm remembering like Pete Quinones quoting Rothbard or something, but he's like, it's funny how your argument against the state is that there might be a state.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Or against anarchy is that you might get a state back. Yeah, that's it. The argument against getting rid of the state is that you might get a state.
And this is going to sound prideful, but I've never heard an argument against anarchism that did not apply more to the state. Not a one. Never.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Well, like, because I know, like, I have family members I'll talk to this about, and, you know, the question is always like, oh, what are you going to do for a court system or, you know, for police? And I'll say some of the theories and they say, well, it just sounds like a lot of litigating, you know, a lot of bureaucracy. And I'm like, oh, well, we wouldn't want to get rid of the current system because then we might have too much bureaucracy.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No, that's when I just whip out The Moon is a Harsh Mistress and go, there is one chapter in here that will explain this very easily. And it took them all of 10 minutes to figure that shit out. You know what I mean? Like, oh, right. Man, it was so good.
And, you know, when people bring up like the warlords part, it's like, you know what? I'll even concede. I do think that there is a good possibility that there will be warlords, but that there's warlords now. Right. So, but at least the warlords would be much less of a threat without a state. And I would much rather live in a world with sparse warlords where their incentives did not align to suppress everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, well, man.
Do we have any final thoughts?
I just remembered that I said I was going to explain something and it's kind of out of place now, but since you're talking about getting out, do you want me to, it has to do with the eliminating hierarchy thing.
Sure. We can do that as a closer.
Okay, sure. This is my sort of resolution of the hierarchy thing. I don't think any left anarchist would agree with this, but it's just the only way that I can make the language make sense. Okay, so the idea to me is like, if we get into an anarchist society, I think the idea, the conceptual framework of employment would change. So if you think about it, like, you've got an employer, and when you go to work, you put on the shirt and the hat that says where you work, right? Like, let's say it's McDonald's, right? You put on the McDonald's shirt and the McDonald's hat, and you go to work at McDonald's, and now you're a McDonald's employee. You're not you. And I think one of the things about anarchy that is, you know, maybe this is unique to the people who are anarchists, but we view ourselves as ourselves. And so if this becomes a widespread conceptual framework for people to just view ourselves as ourselves, like if you think about the way a company has a C Corp and it acts as the C Corp. Okay, so I am my own corporation. And so this all kind of spurred from Jack Spirko talking about one way you can avoid income taxes is you can make a C Corp for yourself, and then you can see if your employer will pay the C Corp. That way it becomes corporate to corporate billing instead of income. And that avoids the income tax. And it's actually, I think it's untaxed. So you only end up paying sales tax when you shop. So the idea to me is, like, when I go to work as an anarchist, I'm going to work as me performing labor in exchange for, payment. Whereas someone going to work today is they go to work as an employee of that corporation. And so when we talk about eliminating hierarchy, I think, you know, maybe left anarchists won't agree with this, but I think the origin of that idea is that what we're really trying to do is recognize individuals as individuals and stop viewing our employers as above us, as if they are rulers. So, like, I think employment could still exist, but I think the way that we talk about it and the way that we understand it as a relationship between me and the owner of a grocery store, for example, it's not that I belong to the grocery store now. It's that I've set up a way to trade with the owner of that grocery store, and I'm going there and doing it because I can, you know, I can improve my own standing in life. If we recognize it as sort of an egoistic thing, as an individual and who's acting self-interestedly, interacting with another individual who's acting mm-hmm. self-interestedly, I think that framework would be more prevalent in an anarchist society, which I think, you know, would percolate as people get used to sort of the mode of operations in life in that situation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make sense to me.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I don't know, that's where I'm at, just because I've been reading, you know, once I started reading Stirner, I viewed it more like, okay, we are individual people. So the hierarchy, I guess here's a visual example to close it out. A visual example of hierarchy is, you know, everybody pictures you take a graph and you've got power at the top of the graph and you've got people across the bottom. And so, like, some people have more power than others, and you end up with these wild peaks. And so you've got a mountain range and all the power is at the top of these peaks. And there's more people at the bottom who have no power. Right. In my visualization of this, if we are all acting as individuals and we don't have this idea in our head of being underneath others, what happens is, rather than flattening it and making it just a straight line across the bottom, which is what socialism does, and which is why everyone becomes equally poor, in a free market anarchist situation, what happens is power is more of an orb with points lying somewhere between the center and the outer perimeter of the orb and all the way across. So what happens is it looks sort of like what are those toys that have the electricity inside of them and you touch them and the electricity follows your fingers?
Oh yeah.
So you imagine, if you imagine like a million of those electrical pulses going across the surface of that thing, and I can interact with it by touching it in different ways. And so power flows through this orb rather than up on a graph. It's a three-dimensional way of it's a three-dimensional way of viewing power relationships. And I think a lot of that just comes from people being lazy and simplistic. And so they're like, well, I have to have a job, so I'm going to go work for this company. And then that company and their relationship with me becomes a part of my identity. Whereas as an egoist anarchist, I am me always and forever, regardless of what interactions I choose to have with this thing that is the economy or power structures or whatever you want to call it. And that's why, like, I think it's interesting. I know it doesn't work very well, but I think it's interesting when you can own an apartment inside of an apartment building that's all connected to each other, because that is a thing you can do. Like, I can buy a flat. And so it's people talk about rent and landlordship, but I try to frame it like it is possible to have this ownership within other layers of ownership with contractual obligations between people. And it's like, yes, this is my flat, I own it, but I have, you know, it, like I said, contractual obligations to others. And it creates sort of this network, this spider web, as opposed to, you know, I've got one guy at the top and we're all, you know, the little peons at the bottom of the mountain living within his system.
Yeah, my only issue with that is there has to be like a no-go zone. Like, if, like, let's say it's an orb, my problem would be like, what's at the center?
Right.
You know, because we could say we have an orb now.
Well, okay, but
and like the federal government is the center, and but then that ought to be the no-go zone.
Well, so let's make it even more complicated. I think everybody is their own orb, and that the center of the orb is you.
Okay.
So they overlap in a million ways.
Right.
Yeah, so that this is where I think power should come from, is from the self, and you trying to achieve all that you can achieve in your life. And, you know, this gets into questions about the nap, obviously, because a lot of people believe that egoists are just people who are willing to, like, consume others in their quest for self-betterment. But I think that that's a more complex conversation that we can get into. I know we've talked about doing that in the future sometimes, so... Yeah. But I will say that it is a bit of a straw man, but I'll leave it at that.
Okay. Well, we might have to do this again sometime.
Yeah.
And then I know, yeah, me and Agora were talking about a separate project, but, yeah, this was cool. I really liked the conversation we had. Do y'all want to go ahead and give y'all's plugs one more time, and then we can go ahead and wrap up?
Sure. I am ace_arcist on Twitter, and if you follow me, I apologize.
Okay. I am Agora Brewing. It's at Agora Brewing on Twitter, Agora_brewing on Instagram, and I also have a blog, which is agorabrewing.home.blog. Check it out. Always trying to brew new alcohol and ideas once in a while if I get the time, but yeah.
I'm Steppy at Pweezno on Twitter, and it's pretty much just dumb jokes.
I'm Bill. I'm Cynical in New York on Twitter. Yeah.
All right, well, thank y'all for coming.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, this was cool because none of y'all have been on the podcast before, or other than like that live thing.
The live one, yeah.
But this is the first time that I don't know if you were there, Agora, but I know Ace and Bill were there. So like this is the first formal episode y'all were a part of. So that's cool.
Right. Yeah. I apologize for not making it to the live one, but
no, it's all good. We'll do it again sometime. All right. Well, thank you for coming, and thanks for listening, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.